Welcome to the Blooming Virtual Summit, brought to you today by the Public Speakers Association. I'm so excited to introduce to you the amazing Ms. Ann Radufs. Ann, won't you take it from here?
Yeah, at my last summit in April, I talked about the post-traumatic stress that is epidemic in our nation. I described our symptoms of unresolved trauma as fitting into two categories. And the first is the compulsion to recreate our traumas. And the second is the automatic avoidance of what reminds us of these traumas. These two categories of recreation and avoidance are further divided into four types of symptoms: mental, emotional, physical, and relational. So please listen to this summit if you haven't yet, so you can recognize these symptoms of unresolved trauma in you and your loved ones, and then hopefully get the help you need. And since the trauma that most adults are suffering from started in childhood, today I'd like to talk about recognizing trauma in children. Because people with post-traumatic stress are compelled to recreate their traumas, we can find these traumatic recreations in every aspect of our society. For example, when I was a pediatric resident, I was once at the delivery of a baby girl who flew out of mom very quickly. So the doctor grabbed the baby, clamped and cut the cord, and moved her into the arms of an orderly within seconds. And the orderly was not expecting the baby to be placed so suddenly in his arms, so his fresh scrubs got soiled. And to the surprise of us all, he began to yell at the baby. "Look at what you did to me! I just put on these clean scrubs and you got them all dirty. I have to wear dirty scrubs for the rest of my shift and it's all your fault." Wow. First of all, this is a classic example of how adults recreate their trauma. This orderly obviously had some childhood experiences of being yelled at and falsely blamed. And this is the relational type of post-traumatic stress, where the baby was put into the same traumatic situation that this orderly once experienced himself when he was a child. And this is how post-traumatic stress is passed down from generation to generation. I find that few people realize what they're doing when they recreate their traumas or avoid what reminds them of these traumas. Even fewer want to make the necessary changes to stop this traumatic cycle. As a result, most traumatized children go on to have the same or similar symptoms of post-traumatic stress as the adults in their lives. They recreate their traumas, like this orderly did, or they avoid what reminds them of these traumas. Now, young children naturally imitate those around them. And when kids have had serious traumas, part of them can be stuck at the age when the trauma occurred and be stuck in the trauma. And this stuckness may manifest mentally, emotionally, physically, or relationally, just like with adults. For example, kids may have aspects of the trauma on their minds a lot, which is a mental recreation of their trauma. When children consistently bring up a certain topic that's not age appropriate, such as physical violence or sex, this may be a clue that they're being inappropriately exposed to physical violence or sex. Attention deficit disorder, an increasingly common diagnosis in children, can be a mental avoidance symptom of post-traumatic stress. If life has been traumatic, they don't want to pay attention. Traumatized children often have trouble concentrating, which interferes with learning. Also, if past learning has been traumatic, you naturally resist further learning, right? And I believe every child suffering from a learning disability should be evaluated for the possibility of trauma. Traumatized kids can emotionally recreate their traumas. They can be highly emotional. They react to the smallest stresses with tears or outbursts of anger. And they can be timid and fearful, cowering in a corner or clinging to mom. They may be guilt-ridden, believing everything is their fault. I often wonder what happened to that baby who was yelled at and blamed when she was seconds old. When children are emotionally overwhelmed, any additional stress can cause a reaction. And the reactions seem inappropriate to their immediate circumstances, but they are recreating the emotions that are totally appropriate to the degree that they've been abused and neglected. Traumatized kids can also be unemotional. A little girl's pet dies and she throws the body away in the trash as nonchalantly as she would a piece of garbage without shedding a tear. When children's healthy emotions have been chronically disrespected, they will detach from them, becoming increasingly unfeeling and uncaring. This is emotional avoidance. Kids physically recreate their traumas. A sexually abused child can become promiscuous, acting out what hurt her. Children can have difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, particularly when they're being abused at night. Traumatized kids may be feeling too many emotional or physical feelings to relax enough to get good rest. And kids also tend to somaticize their stress, and this means their physical bodies display the turmoil of their psychological bodies, as with recurring headaches and stomach aches, and more serious health issues. Hyperactivity can be an avoidance symptom. I remember once treating a boy who had been diagnosed and medicated for his ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and I asked him why he couldn't stay still after school. He said, "My dad always beats me with his belt when he gets home from work, and I'm so nervous I can't sit still knowing what's going to happen." So hyperactivity in the realm of academics or sports is rarely medicated, but it can also be avoidance of trauma. Some kids keep themselves busy to distract themselves from their pain. Of course, some parents keep their child busy to distract themselves from painful memories of their own childhoods. Deep down, children and parents might also believe that if they work really hard and become a star pupil or athlete or a super mom or dad, people might treat them better. Kids can recreate their traumas in their relationships. They abuse and neglect other children or adults in the ways in which they have been mistreated. They hit when they're being hit. They're mean when others are mean to them. They may also avoid relationships. They escape into video games, the web, or books instead of relating when people have been a bad experience. Healthy kids approach what has been a good experience and recoil from what has been a bad experience. And when kids are approaching what is hurtful or recoiling from what should be pleasant and helpful, they likely have endured some serious trauma that has warped their natural inclinations. All these mental, emotional, physical, and relational symptoms can interfere with kids' school performance, family life, and relationships in general. Traumatized kids tend to follow two pathways. One, they regress, acting younger than their age. For example, a small child who's been toilet trained may start wetting the bed at night after a trauma. A baby who has learned to say a few words may stop talking. They may not achieve further developmental milestones on time in the areas in which they're being traumatized. And this regression has actually become such a problem that normal, quote, normal developmental milestones are being rewritten in the United States to account for the fact that our increasingly traumatized population is becoming increasingly developmentally delayed, at least psychologically speaking. And two, the second pathway that traumatized kids take is excelling in some area as a defense against being so traumatized. The brutalized child may become overly nice, loving, affectionate, and goal-oriented as a reaction to all the abuse, as a way of saying, "I'll be anything you want, just don't hurt me anymore." easy to get along with kids reveal their traumatized core by their rigidity in these postures. And by this, I mean they can't swing out of their loving and obedient characters with someone who uses and abuses them. In the rigidity, they continue to focus on a goal, even when that goal is proven to be detrimental. No talk about trauma in children is complete without mentioning satanic abuse. Satanists deliberately seek out children to harm, particularly those reared in wealthy or religious homes. Because satanic abuse tends to be extreme and horrific, kids who have suffered satanic abuse may have extreme symptoms that can show elements of perversion, horror, or violence to self or others in their recreations. Or they may shun any mention of these things in avoidance of their traumas. Know that an utterly frozen posture, typical of your extreme trauma survivor, can be in any character, whether seemingly good or bad. And they typically have extremes of both good and bad within them. The normal activities of childhood, sleeping, eating, drinking, going to school, playing with friends, can twist into extremes with the satanically abused children. They may want to sleep most of the time or very little. A girl may eat excessively, becoming obese, or eat very little, becoming anorexic. A satanically abused boy may turn to alcohol and other drugs to recreate his trauma of being drugged. And these satanically abused children may shun all drugs, including healthy medications, to avoid their trauma of being drugged. They may become very driven and perfectionistic with their schoolwork, or not want to go to school at all. And the latter may occur especially if the satanic abuse is going on at school. Satanically abused kids may want to play all the time, or they're too afraid to go outside and be with other children. Kids manifesting any unwavering extreme, no matter what it is, needs to be evaluated for trauma. So let's look at specific symptoms that should lead to a suspicion of satanic abuse of children. Mental symptoms. Satanically abused kids can be obsessed with death and dying or any aspect of Satanism. They can have difficulty thinking for themselves. They want you to give them the, quote, right answer. They typically refuse to think about or talk about certain topics, such as what might be bothering them. They may show what's on their minds by their attraction to satanic types of movies, books, websites, and music. They use language that's particularly brutal, such as, oh, his jokes just kill me, or I love him to death. They can be routinely vulgar, such as constant use of the F word or other obscenities. And their imagery can be horrific, such as, oh, if he said something like that to me, I'd skin him alive. Satanic abuse survivors usually have had mind control. And some of the contents of their minds has been put there by people who desire to control them. Frequently, these kids' personality traits have been externally manipulated through force, so they cannot comfortably venture outside of their programmed personality. If you tiptoe beyond this well-rehearsed facade that they ever put forward, their traumatized state will become apparent. They usually attack or reject those who venture past their programmed image. Let's look at some emotional recreations in satanically abused kids. Sudden extreme emotions can surface within otherwise stable appearing kids, or there may be a deeply entrenched emotional state such as perpetual sadness or unrelenting anger. Satanically abused children can have extreme attachments to their abusers, loving them fiercely. Separation anxiety is common, as are other expressions of fear, such as a fear of being photographed or bathed. They may have an intense fear of the dark with difficulty sleeping, as with nightmares or night terrors. They may become violent at bedtime and do anything to avoid going to sleep. And this makes sense, particularly when the child is being taken to satanic rituals at night. Some fears in kids may seem strange, such as a terror that arises upon hearing a blender or electric saw. Satanists use all sorts of common household items to torture children. In fact, Satanists often find out what a child is interested in, so they can associate that item or activity with pain, so the child will avoid it from then on. Let's address some physical recreations in satanically abused children. Young children may act out with toys the things that they have suffered at a satanic ritual, such as sexual abuse and other harmful acts. They display precocious sexuality. For example, I once saw a satanically abused toddler perform fellatio on a doorknob. The scary things they are drawn to, whether raging monsters on t-shirts or skulls and daggers hanging from their necklaces or pierced ears, are revealing the scary things they've endured. Satanically abused kids may also spend much of their time zoned out in front of the TV, recreating their mind control sessions. What they watch on TV can be very revealing of the secrets they've hidden within themselves. Satanists always threaten death to any child who speaks of their abuse, death to them or their families. And this then forces kids to tell their traumatic experiences through their behavior. Physical avoidance can be so extreme in the satanically abused survivors that they are numb to their physical feelings. They may cut themselves with no experience of pain. In fact, it may feel good. They may feel a need to stimulate their physical bodies in extreme ways in order to feel something, such as with drugs, extreme sports, self-mutilation, or extreme or perverse forms of sexuality. And these may also be physical recreations of their traumas. Satanically abused kids may avoid physical contact entirely, recoiling if anyone outside the family touches them. When they've learned that touch means violence, they may avoid touching anyone. Let's look at relational recreations. Children with chronic satanic abuse may act out their severe traumas upon other people's bodies. They can manifest extreme personality changes, from the sweetest child to one capable of molestation, poisoning, or even murder. Know that cult-raised children are always programmed to harm the ones they love. Temper tantrums in young children and oppositional behavior in older kids is common. Children can be programmed to oppose, neglect, or abuse their non-cult parents or teachers or anyone who's not completely obedient to the cult agenda. Some satanically abused kids are compulsive talkers. They can be programmed to never be silent and never listen. Again, satanically abused kids typically show extremes. They go and go and go and go and rarely stop except to sleep. Or they have a stillness about them that's eerie, like the life force has been drained out of them. Noticing the many children suffering from post-traumatic stress, I find that most of them show their symptoms at times. But most people don't register these symptoms for what they are: evidence of recreating or avoiding their own trauma. Typically, they're recreating what their parents did with them, or they're avoiding what reminds them of their own unresolved trauma. Instead of admitting the prevalence of people recreating their traumas in the United States, protecting our children and helping them work through any traumas, we as a people tend to cubbyhole kids into two deceptive categories. We either normalize their expressions of trauma, or we pathologize them. To normalize traumatic symptoms is to call a baby that cries 3 or more hours each day merely fussy or, oh, colicky. Toddler's anger is a manifestation of the, quote, terrible twos. A fearful child is simply showing separation or stranger anxiety. Or perhaps you have a, quote, high needs child or a genetically determined shy or sensitive child. How often are we reminded that boys will be boys? Or, oh, it's just one of her daily meltdowns. We all have them from time to time. It's rare for parents to be encouraged to look into what their child's behaviors and feelings are saying. What might he be conveying about what he needs compared to what he is getting? To pathologize traumatic symptoms is to give them a label of mental illness, feeding disorders, elimination disorder, communication disorders, developmental disorders, behavior or conduct disorders, learning disorders, eating disorders, mood disorders, and thought disorders. Many of these problems can be programmed into children by Satanists, including dyslexia, tics, Tourette's disorder, and antisocial behaviors. When we're quick to slap labels of, quote, normal or, quote, pathological onto each symptom, we neglect to see the normal reactions of children to the pathological, their many experiences of abuse and neglect of their human developmental needs. These normal reactions to their needs not being met become pathological over time as these kids grow to become frozen in their behaviors of recreating and avoiding these traumas, rather than meeting one another's genuine human needs. These behaviors become habits. Without help to overcome their traumas and the habitual behaviors that result, these kids eventually follow in their caregivers' footsteps by abusing and neglecting the next generation. If you have any concerns about a child you know, and you want to learn more about recognizing trauma in children, please contact me. You can reach me at annthelistener@yahoo.com. That's A-N-N-E, the listener, at yahoo.com. Also, I have a lot of information on my website about human development and understanding where you and your loved ones are along the developmental continuum. Check out the free quiz entitled, How Old Is Your Soul? At annthelistener.com. I hope to hear from you.